From Georgia Public Broadcasting, it's On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Last month, the FBI and local law enforcement agencies arrested dozens of people in a major sting known as Operation Safe Summer in the metro Atlanta region. 160 missing and exploited children were rescued, some as young as 3 years old. FBI agent Nathan Whiteman headed up the operation and is here to tell us more about it and talk about the growing problem of exploited and trafficked children in Georgia and the rest of the country. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
So this was a huge operation that I think it's safe to say stunned many people. How long had it been in the works?
We've been planning this for about 6 months prior, trying to reach out to as many law enforcement agencies in the metro Atlanta area to participate in the operation to really look at the problem of crimes against children and exploitation of children.
I'm looking at like 38 agencies that you were working with. That's a lot of coordination. How much resources goes into an operation like this?
For us, it is. We pulled people from headquarters. We had support from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, our headquarters branch, as well as the resources of our squad here in Atlanta.
How many people were arrested in the end?
It was 157 people who we had judicial actions against. I believe of those, there were about 140 actual arrests of people.
So this is called Operation Safe Summer. What's behind that title?
What we looked at is children are being exploited, and there are vulnerable children every single day that law enforcement deals with. What our goal was to try to, before the end of summer, locate as many missing children as possible to get them back home, to identify and locate as many exploited children to be able to either get them back home or to a safe environment where they can go through a therapeutic process. And then also looking at the community and seeing what offenders are out in our communities that we had to kind of take out of our communities or check upon to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing to make our streets safer for our children.
Now, I do want to talk about the therapeutic process in a minute, but I'm curious about summer as a season. You know, kids are not in school. Are they in more danger, less danger? Because I'm hearing now that schools are a big place for recruitment.
There are schools are a big place for recruitment. Whenever you have the children there, they are interacting with each other. Summer is typically a season where children have a little bit more freedom, not as much supervision. So what we're looking at is trying to make those streets safer so parents didn't have to worry as much. And those, the predators that are in the communities would kind of be taken off the streets or put into the judicial process, or we would be able to target them, identify them, and kind of start our investigations that way as well.
How does local law enforcement or the FBI go about conducting these kind of operations? What can you tell us about how they plan this sting?
What we did is we communicated. We had several meetings with local and state law enforcement to kind of plan out what exact targets or what exact issues that we were interested in. So every day we deal with, the local law enforcement deals with molestation complaints or investigations dealing with child molestation, with child neglect. They do alcohol compliance checks. All those things are already in the works with law enforcement at the local level. So what we looked at is trying to combine those efforts, put a little bit more manpower towards those efforts to be able to get as much of an investigation forward as possible to then be able to, kind of put together and quantify that number for us as a total law enforcement here in Atlanta.
So where are you looking for clues? Are you looking at websites? Are you actually staking out areas and watching for people?
We do that. We do that every day.
That's the real FBI of work, right?
Yeah, the real FBI work is we are part of a task force which is called the Metro Atlanta Child Exploitation Task Force, or MATCH Task Force. We have investigators. We have, I think, over 17 agencies and over 15 federally deputized task force officers from local state authorities that are part of our task force that we communicate daily as a whole about what's going on in the different jurisdictions. So we have people out conducting undercover operations daily. We have analysts that are going through different websites that are either putting up photos of children that are used by predators to prey on children, or are also used to advertise sex trafficking.
So where are these children from?
From all over. They're from, we recovered two children from as far away as Toledo, Ohio, who were brought down here during a sex trafficking operation. But when you're dealing with online enticement, production of child pornography, molestation, those children are our neighbors. They are the kid down the street. The perpetrators or the predators and the offenders are also our neighbors and the man or woman down the street. So really what we try to look at is it is not one specific area of Atlanta. It is anywhere and everywhere. And that's where we all have to be, you know, concerned about who our children have access to, who has access to our children, and talking to our children about, you know, what they should keep their eyes open for.
So I think when we see on the news, you know, or hear or read about, there's this sweep. Are there really 160 children in one place that you were rescued?
No, it was not just in one location or one neighborhood. This is a combined effort, really throughout five counties. We dealt, because this is the first year that we did this Operation Safe Summer. So what we started out with was looking at the five major metropolitan counties, Cobb County, Fulton County, Gwinnett County, Clayton County, and DeKalb County. So those law enforcement agencies, as well as our federal partners and state partners, really looked at concentrating right now in those areas. And then in hopes of future years that we put forward what we learned from this operation to expand it and continue to expand it and see if we can do it across the country through the FBI offices.
I'm speaking with Nathan Whiteman. He's an FBI agent who headed up Operation Safe Summer that swept up kids. It was a sting with local law enforcement agencies all across the state, helping to identify and find 160 missing and exploited children. In what kind of conditions were these kids held?
A lot of them were, you know, they're in their own homes. Sometimes they are in hotels. They are part of our community. So it really depends upon what type of operation we conducted during the overarching umbrella Operation Safe Summer. So if it was a sex trafficking operation, a lot of those operations deal with hotels. We have other techniques that we use to be able to find offenders and children. A lot of it is also finding adult human trafficking victims on the internet, through the internet. When we're dealing with child molestation victims, they're being exploited most of the time in their homes behind closed doors. So really with those investigations, we really rely on our hospitals, our community partners to be able to bring those types of investigations to light. And then if it is a missing and exploited or missing or runaway youth, really it is just old school police work of going out and trying to find those children who don't necessarily want to be found before they fall prey to something a little bit more sinister.
And so after you identify them, you find them, what happens to them?
It depends on the situation. The number one thing that we look at is what are their basic needs? Are they safe? Have they been fed? And what are really they need to become successful people? If it is a matter of they can go home and they don't have an offender in the house, a lot of times we will put them back in the home and then follow up with non-governmental agencies to be able to reach back out to them to offer services and support through DFACS, through organizations like For Sarah or through Georgia Cares.
Right. Well, we previously spoke with Katrina Owen. She was a sex trafficking survivor. She lived in Atlanta. She's now an activist who talks about how her trafficker would find new victims.
He would roam the mall, and if he see a young girl that's walking by herself, he would walk up to her and tell her how beautiful her eyes were. And if she looked him eye to eye and said, thank you, he knew that she wasn't the one. And when he would approach a young girl who he would give a compliment to and she would look down at her feet, he knew everything that he needed to know.
Wow. So this is something. I was at the airport yesterday, posters and signs everywhere identifying, you know, if you suspect someone is in human trafficking, you know, there's an outline of a really looks like a young girl with an older man. This is something that, as you pointed out, is going on right in our midst. So what do we do if we suspect something?
There are different hotlines that you can call. You can always call Crime Stoppers if it is something that is an emergency situation. I always suggest calling 911. You can call the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to make a tip. And there's also the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, or Polaris. They have a 800 number that you can also call to call in those tips. And what those larger organizations will do is provide that information to law enforcement. Specific, if it is specific to Atlanta, they will send me that tip, which will then go out to our task force to be able to look into and investigate.
Well, Nathan Whiteman, I mean, you and the people who work on this, you're dealing with some really grim stuff. You've been on the force for 14 years. I'm wondering what brought you to this particular area of FBI investigation.
Prior to being in the FBI, I was a teacher. So I've always, you know, through my educational process in dealing with children, trying to better children, when I entered the FBI, I had the opportunity and the ability to use those prior skills in my current job title. And then what we wanted to do through the Innocent Image or Innocence Lost National Initiative back in 2003 with the FBI, starting these sex trafficking task forces and working groups to be able to work with locals and state officials to be able to tackle this issue.
Katrina Owens also shared a message for parents to be vigilant.
It all boils down into, you know, the validation that children receive or don't receive. And quite often, just in the world that we live in now, parents are working more hours than ever, working multiple jobs. The single parenting homes that exist in our country, there are so many opportunities that are being missed. And as parents, we have to be hypersensitive.
So, message to parents: hypersensitive, hypervigilant. What do you add to that?
I think the biggest thing is everything that she noticed and she said is exactly what we see day in and day out. People always ask me, well, what can I do as a normal citizen? What can I do? A lot of times it is, if you have children, you attend church around children, be that role model, be that person, even if their parents aren't providing that love and support, that nurturing that a child needs, you can be that person to set them on the positive track so they will not fall prey to a trafficker or someone else who can entice them online by providing them with ideas and idealities of love and support that are false.
FBI agent Nathan Whiteman, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
He spearheaded Operation Safe Summer, a major undertaking conducted in May to combat child exploitation and sex trafficking. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, it's On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. We continue our conversation about sex trafficking in Georgia. It's a difficult but important subject, given that Atlanta is one of the top 10 markets for human trafficking. Susan Norris is founder of Rescuing Hope, a foundation which hopes to eradicate sex trafficking. Susan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Atlanta is one of the biggest hubs for sex trafficking in America. Why is that?
All of the things that we love about Atlanta, our four sports teams, our international airport, our theme parks that we have, that people travel to Atlanta to come to, they bring an influx of population. And it boils down to a supply and demand issue. When people come in, there is a demand for commercial sex. And so, as one trafficker told me, if we get a call, we answer them all. We may doze, but we never close. So they're going to meet that demand. And we also have three major interstates that travel through our city. And anyone in this industry has a tendency to go from state to state. They don't always keep their trafficking victims in one location because they're constantly looking for where is law enforcement paying attention? Where are they setting the stings? And there's a network. We don't like to think of this as organized crime, but it is. And traffickers communicate with one another. And if one area is getting hot with law enforcement, then they will take their victims and travel elsewhere.
How did you become involved in this?
I was working in student ministry and stepping away from the school that I was volunteering with Fellowship of Christian Athletes when I heard the average entry age into the sex trade at that time was 12 to 14 for girls and 11 to 13 for boys. And that was the age group I just spent 4 years with. So it wasn't a statistic to me. It was actually faces of kids that I'd spent 4 years with. And as I dug into the information and began doing interviews with the victims and families and law enforcement, I realized that some of the very kids that came through our program were victims of sex trafficking in my little bubble where I felt safe. So if it could happen there, it could happen anywhere.
It is staggering to think of children that young being involved in the sex trade. So what does your organization do?
We have three focal points at Rescue and Hope: enlightenment, education, and empowerment. Enlightenment's where we literally travel the country, raising awareness, having community events where we let people know that this issue is going on. It's called the crime hidden in plain sight, and it is. People realize that it's going on in Thailand and Cambodia, but they don't think that it's going on in their zip code, in their backyard, in their child's school. And so we shine the light on that and raise awareness because people won't fight a problem if they don't know it exists. We also, with education, go in and educate first responders. Some of them don't even know they're first responders. It may be a classroom teacher, a counselor, a child psychologist, a school administrator, an ER nurse, the intake information individual for a urgent care. There's been studies done that show that over 80% of trafficking victims saw someone in the medical field for treatment. And at that intersection, no one asked the proper questions to help get them out of the life. So we go in and provide that. Georgia CARES states that of those that they've served that are domestic minor sex trafficking victims, over 90% were in school when they were first approached by their trafficker. Yes.
The school idea is really frightening to me. That's where they get targeted. How?
Honestly, a trafficker goes anywhere your child is. They will be at the mall. They will be at the movies. They will be at the water parks. They go to your child's sporting events, and they sadly might be sitting right beside you because they're looking for their next victim. So they're there, they're cheering, and they're looking for the child who is being left out, the child on the fringe, the vulnerable one as a target. And in some cases, we have worked with individuals where a trafficker would enroll one of their victims in school as a student for the sole purpose of trolling the school, looking for the next person that they could lure into a position of vulnerability. So we have to educate our schools. And then we are also post-certified to train law enforcement, not on statute and code, because they certainly know that, but we come in from a victim perspective because trafficking victims have been told law enforcement is against you. They will arrest you. They will bring harm to you. And so as a result, these victims are not necessarily going to run up to a police officer and say, I'm a victim of sex trafficking. In fact, they will lie and in many cases take charges for their trafficker because they don't trust law enforcement. So we need to go in and help law enforcement understand mentally how someone who's experienced complex trauma may respond to them.
Well, trauma is such a big part of this, but I want to get to that sort of mind control idea. How does that play into, how does a sex trafficker work that in order to control or draw in a kid?
Well, there are three ways that traffickers draw someone into the sex trade or the life or the game. It's referred as all of those things. But as I tell young people, it's not a life you would choose. It's not a game you want to play. And it's nothing you want to be traded for. It's force, fraud, or coercion. And most people, when they think of trafficking, if they realize it happened in the United States, they're thinking of the movie Taken, because that's Hollywood's version of how it happens.
That's the image I have. Grab the girl, put her in the van.
Exactly. And while that does happen, there are some snatch and grabs that do take place in our area. That is not the most common technique. Fraud and coercion are the ways that it is used. Atlanta is known as the hip-hop capital of the world. And so you are looking at people whose mental development is not fully developed, the frontal lobe that causes them to make rational decisions and understand the long-term responses to something that they may do. So they'll be invited to come and be a backup dancer for a new video. And they want their 15 minutes of fame, or one that we saw quite a bit about 2 years ago. Someone will hand out a business card and say, you know, we need a new model. And we had one get sick. We're doing a fashion show at Perimeter Mall. And if you do a really good job here, we'll take you on the road with us and you can do other gigs. And if this person is savvy enough at 12 years old to call the mall, which they probably won't, and ask if there's a fashion show, there is one that weekend, because the best lie has a little bit of truth with it. But the particular modeling agency is not one being represented. And so they will lure them that way, because everyone wants their 15 minutes of fame. The more frightening ways of fraud is the situation where someone has been enrolled in school and they pose as a friend to your child. And they may spend 3 or 4 months building a friendship and building a trust level. And then they invite you to a party or to come spend the night. But what you walk into is not what you thought it was. That party is actually a prearranged gang rape and you're the guest of honor. Or at the spend the night, you go to sleep and you wake up with men in a room and the person you thought was your friend is nowhere to be found.
We're speaking with Susan Norris. She's founder of Rescuing Hope. She's an advocate for sex trafficking victims, but also an author. Is there anything that makes particular girls easier targets? I mean, I'm not in any way blaming the victim, but something either demographic-wise, location-wise, where they are in school, tendencies towards drug or alcohol abuse, any of those?
Well, while honestly, anyone is a potential victim of this, this evil is not a respecter of persons. We've worked with victims who have come from affluent families, divorced families, we've foster care, every demographic that you can imagine. I tell students, if there was a purple polka-dotted race, there would be someone from that trafficked as well. Because to a trafficker, they're not looking for a particular look. They're looking for whatever anyone's going to pay for, because it's all about the money. But what research has shown us is that if you're in a single-parent family, there can be a greater risk. Just the numbers game. You've got one set of eyes versus two watching you, making sure that you're being safe, someone there to supervise, even to monitor your social media and the things that you're doing on the internet, which is the way that a lot of traffickers are luring victims today. We also know from research data that's come out that African-American females are at greater risk, but there are Caucasian females, Indian Asian females, there are male victims, and that's one that most people don't realize. But boys are victims just as well as girls. It may look a little different, but they are also victimized, again, because a trafficker is going to provide whatever the buyer is requesting.
So I'm sure it's difficult to speak of, but is there a story of a particular person who came to your organization and told you what happened to her or him?
Well, we've had countless stories of survivors that have come to us, and we had one particular individual that she was a school student, and she got in trouble with her mother, and they had an argument, and she was grounded to her room, and so she went upstairs, but she still had her appendage, aka her cell phone, with her, and friends were texting her, and she got a message asking if she was going to the party, and she didn't know about a party and started telling them that she was grounded till the end of time and couldn't go anywhere. They were waiting for her father to come home, and this friend said, well, you've got a window, don't you? I can come by and pick you up. So she climbed out and went down to the end of her driveway, and this car pulled up with her friend in it, and a guy driving that she didn't recognize. And they invited her in the car to go to the party, and he offered her a pill to take and said, let's get this party started. And she declined and said she didn't do that. And so he told her, fine, get out of the car. He didn't want to take a party pooper to the party. So she had to either swallow the pill and go on to the party or try and figure out how to get back into her house without her mother knowing that she had left to begin with. And she took the choice that most teenagers would, and she swallowed the pill, and it turned out it was ecstasy, which is the date rape drug. And by the time she got to the party, she did not have a great deal of control over her faculties. And when she went inside, there was no one there that she recognized. There were a bunch of men, and she was the guest of honor, and it was a gang rape, and the man who had driven the car became her trafficker.
As a prevention, as an education advocate, which steps, where would you have interceded or warned a young person not to take that next step?
Well, quite honestly, I always tell people you have that sixth sense where you know that you shouldn't do something, where you get that heart rate going up. You're trying to figure out, how can I get out of this? What can I do? And that is your point of intersection that you can make a choice. And I never blame a victim. No one ever asked to be trafficked. But when we do speak with students and we explain to them what force, fraud, and coercion is, then we go back to those scenarios and tell them, now that you know the story, let's look at the different points of intersection that might have been a place that she could have done something or he could have done something to prevent the next step from happening. And it's, again, it's not the blame game. It's to get students thinking outside of the box so that if they find themselves in a similar situation, they realize they can put on the brakes and find an exit strategy.
In these cases, when you are dealing with people who have been, minors who have been sex trafficked, or even older people, I'm sure, and you integrate them back into society or reintroduce them to their old lives, what is the follow-through like? I mean, I'm thinking that, especially with the symptoms of PTSD, the weight that they're carrying psychologically and physically must be huge.
There's a great deal that needs to take place in the restorative process. We serve those that are over 18, but the vast majority of those that we do serve were trafficked as minors and into adulthood, or they got out just before they turned 18. Some of them will go into a residential restorative care program that may be a year or two. Many of them don't, because that's another form of control, because you have to follow a schedule and do what someone's telling you to do. And they've just come out of that environment, so they don't want to go there. Either way, there is a great deal of physical trauma to the body and complex trauma mentally that they have endured. So we always try and make sure that we get those that we serve into medical care to evaluate their health and see where they are and what they need as far as health care. While we don't have the financial resources at Rescuing Hope to provide that, we have worked and partnered with several doctors and dentists who have been willing to work pro bono and service our survivors as a way for them to step into the fight. As I tell people, you don't have to quit your day job. Look at how you can leverage what you're already doing for this movement. And then we try and find therapists that can work with the survivors on complex trauma and PTSD. And what we have found is they really need to be versed in complex trauma, because someone who is dealing with an addiction can go to an addiction recovery therapist who is may or may not have worked in complex trauma. The same with someone who has experienced rape. While it's very traumatic for them, it's vastly different than someone who's been raped between 10 and 30 times a night for 2 years. So you need someone who has a skill set to unpack all of that. And it is a lifetime of recovery.
That was Susan Norris, founder of Rescuing Hope and author of a book of the same name. There's more information on her organization and resources to help victims of human trafficking at gpbnews.org.